This is the Team Builders Podcast, building better teams.
There are all these architects across the world, they will be the face, but ultimately there is a team behind that that's added something to generate the idea. So really it's about trying to encourage people to disrupt, to offer different opinions.
This is the Team Builders Podcast with Stephen Haseley, Jerry Crowley and Jonathan Haseley.
Hello and welcome to the Team Builders Podcast. This is the podcast where you hear insights, tips and tricks into what makes a great team, as well as, of course, in-depth interviews from some business leaders and top teams around the UK, as well as hearing from our network of team building partners from across the globe. We have a really great episode today, folks, with Mr. Murray Henderson joining us from House Collective. House Collective is a studio practicing architecture and urban design based out of Glasgow, but now operating all over the world. Murray, great to have you here.
Lovely to be here. Nice to meet the guys and looking forward to today's session.
Thank you, Murray. I'm, of course, also joined by my co-directors, Jerry and Stephen. Gents, how are we?
Brilliant. Although, no exercise this morning. I'm off the wagon. I've listened to some motivational clips and they're not working.
It's never easy.
No, so I'm going to have a serious talk with myself. Hopefully, Murray's going to kick me into action with some kind words of motivation, something like, just do it.
No doubt. So Murray, thanks again for being here. I'd love if you could just kick us off by telling us a little bit about House Collective and what it is that you guys do.
Yeah, no problem. We, as a practice set up 10 years ago, my business partner and I had worked together in a previous practice, spent a little bit of time working in Glasgow, across the UK. We'd also had been in the Middle East for a period of time. Jim had been in China. We came back to Glasgow and realised that we wanted to do a little bit something different. We set up the practice just the back end of 2013, and we were just 10 years old there. And looking forward to the next 10, albeit Jim's a little bit older than me, so maybe we'll try again.
Yeah, that's called exit plan.
There's a text in from Jim.
Yeah, our first caller.
Actually buzzing there, you say that. So yeah, and we do a bit of everything from your high-rise residential to commercial office, one-off single dwellings, refurb, retrofit, a bit of everything.
And obviously, you know, 10 years this year, amazing milestone. Over the years, how have you gone about creating your team and building your team around you?
Yeah, well, I suppose to start with, you're doing well to pay yourself. Yeah. So the team had to be pretty tight.
You pay yourself.
So Jim and I, we had to be switched on, working pretty hard. Ultimately, any team comes down to hard work, as you guys will probably know better than me. So we started pretty tight. We brought people that we trusted close to us. Then we kind of cherry-picked and pinched a couple of people from where we'd worked previously, the people that we thought aligned with our kind of mentality and our ambitions, brought them in. And then that gives you something to build around. And then over the years, I suppose, we've tried and tested different methods. I think a critical thing for us has been culture. We are pretty committed, determined, ambitious people. And ultimately, you want your team to come in with that similar mindset. It's not just about a job. Architecture's not an occupation, it's a preoccupation, so it's a hobby as much as it is a job. So, But our culture where you want to come to work in an environment that you enjoy being at work, it doesn't really feel like a job. Yeah. Obviously it is. There is contracts, there's employment, but it's trying to, I suppose, blur the edges of that as best we can and give people an environment to feel they can come in and be the best version of themselves. We try and encourage people to bring them their whole selves to work. It's not just about you come through the door and all of a sudden game face, it's on. Just be the same person all the time. Bring that personality. And I suppose in the industry we're in, creativity really requires us to try and draw as much of that personality out of everybody as we can and put that in the mix. And there's been positive tests when it comes to bringing a team together. There's been some major mistakes. I think you can't get better without knowing what you've done wrong. So that's been quite useful, painful, but useful. And I suppose what's been interesting over the last 3 or 4 years in particular, the team's kind of naturally become a kind of 50% male and female, different nationalities, pretty much a bag of everything, really. Which in itself, given, as I say, a creative environment, it's quite a nice place to be.
Yeah, I absolutely love that ethos and very much aligns with, you know, our own business and what we try to bring businesses, that whole bring your whole self to work. I really like that. It's something that we should remember, keep a note of that for sure.
Absolutely.
One thing that we talked about pre this little conversation, Murray, which really excited me, I don't know what the word is it a theory or methodology or just a mindset around something that you call creative abrasion? Is that something you could maybe, you know, expand on?
Look, I think attitude, behaviour is the most significant thing I've learned over the years. In the workplace, I can be the best designer in the world, but if my attitude and my behavioural practices aren't good and strong, then ultimately it means nothing. So what we try to promote are attitudes and behaviours that we as business owners want the team to commit to in their day-to-day work. Creative abrasion is really about making sure we have disruptors. I might well come up with an idea for a building design, but if everybody disagrees with my idea and everything I suggest we do, then fundamentally we're relying purely on whether or not my idea is good enough. And I know from experience that that can't possibly be the case, that you never design a building on your own. There are all these star architects across the world. They will be the face, but ultimately there is a team behind that that's added something to generate the idea. So really it's about trying to encourage people to disrupt, to offer different opinions. Not fight, but create enough of a disruption and a friction between us that we are ultimately making sure that whatever idea we settle on in the end has fundamentally been tried, tested, and we're all in the end and agreed, because it has been pushed and pulled like that. And I think if we don't have that type of attitude, then ultimately we just get quite static, churn out the same type of solution for each and every project, and then it's just a kind of cut and paste job, and that's too boring. It's not particularly fulfilling, and we're in our careers a long time, and every day needs to be different. So that's really about trying to promote that attitude, that behavioural pattern.
Yeah, friction, it kind of resonates. Sometimes it can get out of control as well on occasion. So obviously you have to control how it goes about, but is there a time where it ever created an innovative idea that you can remember? That one that said, yes, this is the right track, and for every four or five that fall apart and have to be put back together, this one stood out?
We're a practice that has often found ourselves perhaps what you would say punching above our weight from at different stages through the kind of evolution. One of our very first projects, which is probably one of our most significant, was within 6 months of becoming a practice. And we were all of a sudden, we found ourselves as a Glasgow practice working on a project in Manchester, where, not that the client knew at the time, but we had me and my business partner Jim, two other staff members renting desks at a landscape architect's office in the loft of a pub. And we won this £90 million project in Manchester, 35-storey building, 466 apartments. And ultimately, it would have been dead easy just to agree with whoever came up with the first thought. But ultimately, and I suppose that's really where the sentiments come from, is in that small team of what were experienced people, we were still challenging one another constantly. And then in the end, we come up with a solution that has gone on to become the kind of the flagship project for the client at the time, who are now building multiple buildings all over the UK. And it wouldn't have come around if we hadn't just had that ability to fall out with each other. And I think just taking that forward in itself, friction, it's important that you can disagree. I think one of the challenges we see more and more today is that people are less resilient than perhaps we once were. I was certainly brought up in a culture and a practice where you had to be resilient, you had to be able to take a knock. Architecture, when I was at university, you used to have your crits were your exams, your presentations were on the wall, and you would be slaughtered if it wasn't considered good enough. And I don't use that word. I mean, it's deliberate. We were slaughtered. You were made to feel very small. I'm not saying that was necessarily entirely right, but what it has done is it's built resilience. It's built survival.
It's emotional, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what, in some experiences in these latter years, emotional stability isn't built into the new players, if you like. Because when somebody says something that you emotionally disconnect with, that makes you feel discomfort. As opposed to, like what you mentioned, when you're growing up, if you slagged off here and there a wee bit, and you grow, that grows inside you. So when it happens on a small level, it doesn't really affect you.
I've found myself of late having to start a conversation by saying, look, I'm not criticising. And then I've realised, well, that's nonsense, because I am. That ultimately it's not good enough, or it's not quick enough, or, we've maybe thought about that the wrong way. Have we thought about it like this? Have we engaged this individual or that? Have we brought...
Yeah, because you want them to get better, don't you? You don't want them to go in sulk and go,
Exactly. So a big part of developing our team has been the introduction of an infrastructure around behavioural framework. We have a series of personal development plans that we work between our HR team and our staff. We have staff reviews, but they are focused on not identifying failings, but identifying areas for development ultimately, because it is about wanting to help people get better. It's not simply a case of pointing out that's not good enough, that doesn't work, we don't get anything from that. It has to be about how do we progressively move forward.
When you use the word criticism, I think in our business and the business that we work with, we don't criticise the people, we criticise the system. Because
yeah.
Sometimes the system allows them to do bad things and make bad decisions and carry on in a route that's not going to be productive for the company.
Yeah.
And it's great to fail, as long as we don't fail again and again and again the same thing. And what we have learned from working with clients across the UK and beyond that is that they're happy to fail, but they just box that off and understand they're not going to make that same mistake again. They build that into their system and people understand why what they're doing builds into the bigger picture, whatever that bigger picture is, however they qualify success to be.
Sometimes you forget who you're doing it for. You know, because you're not really doing it for yourself. You're doing it for your client, your customer. You know, if you build them what they want, sometimes it's not about what you want, unless, of course, what you present is the vision that they wanted.
Ultimately, our clients are great importance to us, because without them we don't have a business. But what we try to do in our culture is remind our team that their first client is the practice.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because we have our own design process, we have our own quality management process, and that's about us trying to achieve what we believe is the best form of architectural solution we can create through our teaching, our education and our commitment to that particular endeavour. And that's not to say that our clients aren't, but they're looking at it from a different perspective.
Yeah, practically.
What their ultimate gain or what they're looking to achieve from it is different from what we are. We ultimately want the best possible buildings. It just so happens we'd like to be paid for that.
Yeah.
Yes.
But ultimately it's about designing the best buildings. And so we try to remind the team that our first client is always ourselves, because we have to hold ourselves to our high standard. And if we can achieve that and satisfy the client, then we're all winning.
Yeah.
If we don't achieve our high standard, then the client just gets, he might achieve what he wants, but we failed. So it has to be a bit of both.
And did you find yourself in the early days making those mistakes? We found ourselves 23 odd years ago being really nice guys, sorting out other people's problems, but it wasn't our business advantage at all. We just sorted people's problems because we were nice guys, and we still are, but that didn't feed into the overall vision for our company. Did you find yourself making those similar, taking opportunities that really weren't business worthy long term?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we always, another thing we talk to the team about is that it's okay to make mistakes, because we all make them. We have made plenty of them over the years. I still make them, both in life and in work. And ultimately, it's a great importance. You have to have those moments. But when I look back on them, though, I don't necessarily see them as bad things to have happened. Mm-hmm. Our business is far better for us perhaps having that attitude of, we'll do that little thing that maybe isn't business sensible, but ultimately we've gained something from it. Yeah. And whether that might be, don't ever do that again.
The second time.
Jim, I told you, Jim.
Well, exactly. But ultimately, we've got something that, you know, 10 years in, we see those things quicker, our experience is better, we can advise people better, and we can be more focused on what we want out of our business. But I think it's important that you make those mistakes sometimes.
Yep.
I think also you just have to be true to yourself. Like, a lot of those mistakes weren't made because we were approaching them the wrong way. It's just we were approaching them because we consider ourselves to be nice people.
Mm, I understand.
And I think ultimately, the most ruthless of business people on the planet probably are not the nicest of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, you talked earlier before we came on air about motivational speeches, and you hear them from everybody, but ultimately those that are focused specifically on money and generating that, they can approach certain things a particular way. What we like to think is that our attitude, we'll get our results over time, and the nature of the business we're involved in, you have to be in it long enough to get the benefit. Most of our projects are 4 or 5 years from start to finish, so they're not quick endeavours. So it has to be about being in, you know, that pursuit of idea, the constant focus on development, and being comfortable making mistakes, learning from them.
Yeah. I really loved what you said earlier, Murray, about, you know, the firm being your employee's first client, in terms of, you know, I think that really aligns with how we operate our business as well, in that we make choices that aren't necessarily commercial, but that they suit our ethos or what we want from it. You know, we spend more money on something to be higher quality, which the customer at the end of the day recognises or doesn't recognise, but for us that's what matters. And I think that's a really key part of continued development and allowing people to flourish in their chosen line of work or livelihood or whatever it might be. I really love that. I think that's a great point to talk to.
We've always got to remind ourselves why we're there.
Yeah.
Why are we doing it? So we'll agree a fee with a client based on the size of a project, the number of drawings, so on and so forth. But the first thing we'll sit down and do internally is say, what do we think we should do? And that sometimes is about us learning from, like, there's more to gain from a project that we work in than just simply the fee we get for it. There is education, there is development, there is innovation. It's very difficult to put a price on that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think if you focus every job just to do what the fee says you should do it for, yeah, then ultimately our practice will never grow.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We have to make sure we're always striving for more and better.
They know they've got you at the end. That's so what we talk about sometimes. They don't know they want it, but they need it. And then when they've had an experience, they're like, oh, okay, that's the difference. It's intangible in some ways.
And also, none of us, no matter what business sector we're in, we can never charge for pride. But that feeling is like the very first business deal you do. If you can capture that feeling, every business deal that you do, then you're always going to be on that journey of discovery and the pleasure of actually doing every day what you set out to do back in the early days.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was trained to be an architect. I wasn't trained to be a manager. I wasn't trained to be a motivational speaker. I wasn't trained to take a guy from 20 out of uni and have him work with you for 10, 20 years.
Yep.
All of my experiences in that come from sport, ultimately, and from team spirit, dressing rooms, camaraderie, that pride.
Yep.
You know, you cross the line, you're not coming off until you've left everything on the pitch.
Yep.
And I think we certainly try to carry as much of that, because I think in itself that helps. We're all emotional people,
yep,
and the best way we can channel our emotions if there's something that we're actually aiming towards and we're all committed to together collectively. So I think sometimes I can take the dressing room type mentality chat into the office in the wrong way.
Hairdryer treatment.
I'm often reminded, but you know, by the HR guy, I have to maybe stop slagging people a little bit. But again, it's about
slag him off, her off,
building a bit of resilience. But as pride is a massive part of, we design projects because we want them to be built and people to experience them. And changing the nature of how built environments experienced, and we're not a practice that wants buildings to be recognised. Oh, that's a house building. I would rather our buildings were never recognised, because 9 times out of 10, that will tell me that they're in the right place and they're doing the right thing, because we'll all just experience life around them. I think too much now, everybody's trying to make a statement with everything, and the world doesn't need that.
Yep.
So sometimes it's just about being humble enough to know yourself that you've done a good job and just allow it to be.
Do you find whenever you're in that creative process, you know, we're, I guess, fairly creative people, but not on the same
scale.
Again, but in that process, as you mentioned, some projects 3, 4, 5 years, I guess, do you ever have disagreements on the customer end where they think, oh, they just want this, and you go, no, I can do it better? And how do you, like, tackle that?
Oh, yeah, you I mean, ultimately, I'm not giving away all the trade secrets that we have, but yeah, ultimately, a client's always right, is often the expression, and we have to allow clients always to feel like they are. The critical part of that, and I don't say that flippantly, I say that honestly, that there are things that we know will be better for them, they can't see it yet. Equally, there are people that can tell us what is better for our business, but we couldn't see it, so that's why we get advice and we go and seek that from other people. So I think we just have to try to find different ways, depending on the client, the personality, the individual, what we sense there. A lot of that is about emotions and knowing people, and not actually to do with the work itself. How might you tackle a discussion? How might you present the idea? And I always tell our team, we're storytellers at the end of the day, architects. We draw, we design, but ultimately we have to be able to explain a narrative. We have to tell a story. And so communicating, talking, being able to comfortably explain and demonstrate genuinely how much you care about it, that 9 times out of 10 wins the battle. But most importantly, you have to demonstrate how it's going to bring greater value. And our clients, ultimately, what they want out of it is optimum value, 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
So we have to make sure we can promote that story that gives them what they're looking for. And that's always the hard bit, but we do our best.
You mentioned, obviously, your experience from sport, and you've got a storied sporting career. Murray, is that a good way to describe it?
I've had some fun over the years, I think every child that ever comes through a school with their mates wants to be involved in something that gives them that kind of adrenaline rush. Back in the 80s, oh God, I sound old.
Not to me.
But it was football. I mean, nowadays kids can do so many, a multitude of different things. Back then it was pretty much football, jerseys down at the side of the pitch, making the goals and having a kick about. And I was fortunate enough to experience lots of things through football, meet lots of wonderful people, and to this day still have as close friends. But I think critically for me, the experience of being in those dressing rooms over the years introduced me to how to deal with different types of people, different walks of life, different attitudes to life, different upbringings, different challenges. It taught me to be more considerate, humble, sensitive, empathetic. You know, all those things come from... And also, more importantly, and something we look for constantly in our team is, and I often say this to Jim, I remind myself sometimes when the chips are down, I remind myself of those days where you're sitting in the dressing room, looking around, knowing that there's lots of good players in your team, but ultimately they're... On that particular day, in that particular difficult game, there's going to be three or four characters that win the game. It's not going to be their quality, it's their character, their ability to drag people when they're not having a good game, or encourage them, or give them a rocket up the backside, either or. And a lot of that plays well into how an office studio, a culture needs to work. And you've got to work as a team. You can't go, it's not an individual endeavour. Your career is, but the best way to make most of it, from my experience, is to embrace everybody that's with you and try and work as hard with them.
And often that, as you did mention there, in the football field, that doesn't always come down to skill. So you might have extremely skillful, creative people in your team, but it's about how those characters that bring you through and that get you over the line and deliver the project. And, you know, we talk a lot about keeping projects on course and dealing with failure, which we often have to do on a football pitch, or success, and how your team rally around that. And I think that speaks a lot to the stuff that we do for our customers, and talking about whenever the project gets difficult, how you have to stay in there, be resilient, some of the words you've already used, and we've done our job, yes, but we still need to get this over the line. So let's go.
A lot of the time, it's the simplest of things that are overlooked. I mean, I always say to young people that join our office, architecture's not difficult. What's difficult is the people that are involved in it. They create the difficulties, they create the challenges, because they don't just look at things simply, approach them with the right attitude and with the right sentiment. And we create problems. The answer to getting these problems fixed is just taking them back to simple attitude and behaviours, and it's critical that you maintain that confidence in how simple those things can be, because as soon as we overcomplicate, one, we're eroding our ability to generate any profit, which is ultimately why we're all in business.
Yes,
but we're also just removing any motivation, any kind of sense of pride and genuine commitment to the project, because you're just slowly but surely dragging everybody down. It doesn't need to be that difficult.
And here's a tough question for you. If you had, you know, you can only apply one person and they got two different types of skills, which one would you go for? What best skill do you think, if you only had one choice?
Well, interesting. We try every now and again little experiments in the office in terms of recruitment to see whether or not different types of people
apply,
become different workers, different qualities. I would never take the most skilled architect over somebody who genuinely demonstrated an attitude of wanting to learn. Because I can work more with a person that wants to learn and develop certain skills than the person who might promote "I'm already there" type attitude.
Yeah.
So I think I'm always looking for people that are genuinely determined to learn more, open to that. I suppose it comes back to what I said earlier, character. You want to sense in character that there is resilience, there is genuine understanding that the world isn't straightforward and it won't be handed to you. You have to work. I have two young boys, and they're both enjoying their endeavours in football at their early age. And the first thing that's ever said to them beyond "enjoy yourself" is "work hard."
Yeah.
So I think those things, skill and talent, can be developed, but you can't teach somebody how to want it enough.
Yeah, and you do a little bit of lecturing as well.
I do a bit of teaching, yeah.
And you get the opportunity to talk to the group about that.
Well, it's quite interesting, because I probably break rank a couple of times, because... Naturally, I'm a studio design tutor, so you're there to just help advise the students on their design solutions over the course of the two semesters. But the students I'm teaching are, at the end of their third year, will go out to practice for a year. Yeah. The architectural course is such that you do 3 years, you then go out for a year's experience, and then you come back into till you need to finish off your studies. So I feel it's important for tutors to also speak beyond the design and actually remind them that they need to have other skills to get a job and to maintain the job. We always say to our team, it's not our responsibility to keep you in a job, it's our responsibility to pay you. Your responsibility is to keep yourself in your job by you know, demonstrating your attitude and your commitment to what you want out of your career. It's your career at the end of the day. We can help you as much as we can, but it's down to you. So.
Well, great to hear about the university. I think touching students at that early age gives them, you know, a better spice for the job ahead. I, like you, have two boys and one heading off to a university student. And, you know, he's fed up with dad, hearing dad saying these things. So when he listens to the podcast, he'll hear from somebody else. Get out there and get resilient.
That's massively important. You know, we can be taught to pass exams and we can be taught, you know, how to get the best grades, but we can't be taught life. You have to go and live that. You have to go and get engaged in it and be prepared to put yourself in difficult spots sometimes. So,
Murray, you're an exceptionally balanced, well-rounded young man. I can say young.
I don't know if my wife would say that.
Off balance.
How do you have that work-life balance? You do seem to be obviously not obsessed by your business, but you seem to be committed to your business. And I did read that you were committed and did a cycle, charity cycle, amazing distance from Glasgow to Berlin of 532 miles. What was the motivation behind that?
Interestingly, so my eldest son, each Saturday we'd walk into town, into Glasgow, we'd do a bit of shopping, or his mum would do a bit of shopping, we'd have coffee and cake.
Mostly cake.
And we would walk past, unfortunately, many people who would be living in the street, and he would always say, "Dad, why don't you give this man some money?" And I said, "Well, Dad's got to keep his money to look after you and Nico." Mm-hmm. And he said, "Well, does that man have a house, Dad?" I said, "Well, no." He said, "Well, can we not give him our house? Ours is big enough." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, yeah, but we've got to keep you in that house." And so it became quite a difficult. I realised I wasn't actually answering his question to his satisfaction, and it was leaving me a little bit of a sticking point. And it transpired, you know, Jim's mother, who sadly passed away a couple of years ago, was also quite heavily involved in working with homeless charities. So we had the chat and then came up with a ridiculous idea to celebrate our 10-year anniversary by cycling to Berlin.
Yep.
And Jim told me it was 532 miles. By the end, it was 652. So the small matter.
And Jim's another architect. Yeah. He's the measurement man.
So Jim's meant to be the experience in our duo. So we decided we would do that. We supported the Marie Trust, fantastic charity, just local to where our office is in the Merchant City. And we were able to raise a nice sum of money for them. It'll make a big difference to their day-to-day goings on. And it was a fantastic experience. Really, really enjoyed it. And good fun.
Amazing. Inspirational.
Absolutely, absolutely. Murray, listen, you've been absolutely fantastic guest for us today. We really appreciate your time here. For me personally, huge takeaways around the importance of resilience, attitude, behaviour, and again, all things that really speak to our business and a lot of the customers that we have the pleasure of working with too. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah. We enjoyed it. Thank you, James.
Thanks,
a pleasure, a pleasure. We wish you all the very best. We'll be looking for, or we won't be looking for, House Collective buildings. If we don't know they're there, you've done a good job. Is that
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, awesome. We're all over it. Well, my next building will have my name right at the top of it. So it'll be like Trump Tower, but maybe not quite as gold. Listen, thanks so much again, gents. It's been great to have you both here, Stephen and Jerry.
Thanks John. Good show.
Thanks for your time.
Great show.
Great show, and sure. And this has been the Team Builders Podcast. Thanks so much, and we'll check you for the next episode. Thank you.